Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Riley, Judge Gaitis, the Honorable Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Good morning and welcome to this June 14 virtual panel of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The next matter on for oral argument this morning is Voss v. Graikula. Correct me, I'm sure, during the oral argument if I've mispronounced the party's name. Counsel, each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you choose to use it. Be mindful of the fact that because we're engaging these proceedings by Zoom platform rather than live, that even though we can see each other's face and our names, the audio recording of the proceedings is all that we'll be making for the sake of the public. So please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument for the sake of those recordings. If at any time, so far technology has worked out great today, but you never know when things will go awry. So if the audio or video gets glitchy, you have difficulty hearing or seeing anyone, just alert us and we'll pause the proceedings and try to get the technology sorted out. Counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. Counsel, Attorney Kiri Doom here on behalf of the appellant in this matter, Christopher Graikula. Your Honors, the issues before the court today come down to interpretation of the Minnesota Child Support Statute, specifically relevant portions as outlined in Minnesota Statute Section 518A.36, Subdivision 1A. Appellant's position is outlined in our brief that the issues before this court today are matters that are subject to a de novo review by this court as they call into statutory interpretation and application of the statute to undisputed facts. Really, what we are dealing here with today, Your Honors, is language within the child support statute that talks about essentially the parenting expense adjustment, the language regarding overnight equivalence, as well as whether or not the statute also permits the court to calculate parenting expense adjustments using both a combination of overnight and overnight equivalents. Candidly, Your Honors, with respect to the first issue as to really what constitutes an overnight equivalent, that has been an issue that I think family law practitioners have struggled with immensely, as likely courts have as well. And unfortunately, there is really no case law out there that gives much direction or guidance as to what the definition or what an overnight equivalent is.
Can I pause you for a minute to go back to the standard of review?
Yes.
So I guess I'm ordinarily in these circumstances of child support and how many hours are allocated to one parent or days to another, it's a matter of the court's discretion. Is it your view that the statute's amendment this reference to overnights versus overnight equivalents is a matter of mandatory determination by the district court so that there's not really any discretion and so we have a de novo review? Or are you acknowledging that the district court has discretion to decide whether the case qualifies as an equivalent case or an actual overnight case?
Your Honor, I think what my position is here, Your Honor, and on the appellant's behalf, is that the issue here is not necessarily deciding what was the parenting time. The parenting time was already established, but then when we get to the issue of child support, how do we then look at whether or not something constitutes an overnight equivalent? And so in the statute doesn't define, the statute gives us a definition, but it really doesn't, there's really no guidance as to what, how to apply or interpret that. And so
right, so my question is, do you think it's a matter of the court's discretion or do you think it is mandatory that the court apply one approach or the other, whether it's across the board or to individual days or weeks in the parenting time arrangement?
I guess I would have to say that I think it's to the court's discretion in the sense that how it's going to analyze or consider what is an overnight equivalent or not. However, I think that how to interpret that overnight equivalent is the issue of concern, if I'm answering your question.
Well, I'm just not sure. Well, I'm not sure the parties are arguing the same things as I look at the briefs. It looks like one side is saying, you know, the district court took an either or across the board, either all of the parenting time is allocated to overnights, or you use this equivalent approach across the board. And the other side seems to be arguing, no, that's not what the district court did here. The district court looked at the Wednesdays and said, we're going to use the overnight approach here. It doesn't qualify under the court's approach. And correct me if I'm right that I'm describing a disagreement between what the parties are arguing. Go ahead.
My apologies, Your Honor. No. I think I can maybe try and answer that in a twofold approach. I think one, from my perspective, the district court's decision was confusing or concerning in the sense that my interpretation of her order was that she found that we could either, that it was an either or situation, right? That either you calculate child support based on overnights, or you calculate both on overnight equivalents, but that you can't.
That brings me to my question. I am trying to find in the order, district court order, where you arrived at that conclusion and reading of that order, because I don't see it in the order. So if you could help me out with that, I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Your Honor. I can reference it. I think where my emphasis comes is it's an addendum, Appellant's addendum at 19, and this is page 6 of her argument, which again is at, or of her order, which is at addendum 19. And it's really on the use of the emphasis on the word or that she puts in there. And I think that's where I came to the conclusion that I did in trying to understand her analysis. She emphasizes that word or, and so from my interpretation, that emphasis of that looked at it from the standpoint of that we have to apply one or the other, but that we can't look at the total parenting time as a whole and apply that parenting expense adjustment.
I thought that's what you were doing, and I saw that italicized word or as well, but I'm not convinced that italicizing the word or necessarily means you can either do this or do that across the board, as opposed to you can either do this or across, or do that for individual dates. It seems like, I'm not sure how you jump to the conclusion that I'm not sure that italicizing that one word leads you either to one conclusion or the other as to what the district court was doing. I gather there's nothing else. I didn't see anything else in the district court's analysis that would either support or contradict your interpretation.
And I would agree. I think it was just that emphasis on that word or that gave me pause for concern. And so if we move then away from that piece, if the issue doesn't appear to be a dispute about whether or not we can use the combination of the two, then I think it really comes down to is how do we begin looking at defining what is an overnight equivalent?
Well, that gets me to my question about the standard of review.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's assume that's where we are.
Yep.
To what extent does a district court have discretion to say that something qualifies as an equivalent to overnight? Is it after 19 hours? Is it 10 hours? Is it 15 hours of time with the parent? It seems to me you're saying the district court was compelled to make this determination. And if it's within the court's discretion, help us to understand the parameters of the court's discretion.
Your Honor, and I think that's partly where the issue lies, is trying to understand where that discretion lies. Because when we don't have any guidance about, when we have this statutory definition that just says more, where does that discretion become appropriate or an abuse of that discretion? And again, though, it's my position that as we look at this, we need to step back and say that this is a matter of statutory interpretation about whether what constitutes an overnight equivalent. And there needs to be some guidance on this piece, because we may have some judges that, you know, depending on the circumstances, I do think there has to be some discretion in that based on the factual situation. But even if we were to apply some type of an abuse of discretion standard here, I think given the extensive period of time that happens on that Wednesday overnight or on that Wednesday parenting time, under either standard that we apply, I think that here there clearly is that abuse of discretion. Well, and I
think help us to formulate the rule of law then. Let's assume we agree with you and we're going to say this is how the statute is interpreted. A district court must, I gather from your argument, must say it's in the overnight equivalent when, and what's the rule of law and what's the basis for the parameters?
Your Honors, I think a great place, I think you'd have to start at more than 50% of the day. I think if you look at significant, that's going to be more than half the time. If you look at more than half the hours, I think if you're talking about a situation where we're talking about 4 hours of parenting time.
Hold on. If I read the statute correctly, it says the district court may use one or the other if it's significant amount of time, it's equivalent. So what if, I mean, clearly the district court then would have the discretion whether to use the equivalency approach if it's significant. But when does it get beyond the district court's discretion? When does it become so significant that the district court abuses its discretion by not calling it equivalent overnight?
And then let's throw this factor from this case in, because mother at the hearing talked about how she provides the clothes for the kids when they go to dad's, and he's living with his parents. So presumably doesn't have housing costs like she does. And his parents provide the food. And if the goal of child support is to give the kids the best or most economic support that these two parents can, how did the judge or the judge who reviewed the child support magistrate's order, how is that an abuse of discretion when you look at the policy behind the child support statutes? And how do you factor in all of those different things? To Judge Ross's point, it seems that abuse of discretion is what we need, because each case is so fact-bound to the specifics of that case.
I've come back around to trying to answer both of your questions here. And if I don't answer, hopefully you guys will catch me on that. I want to first address the Justice Riley's question about, you know, the notion that mom was providing the clothes and here we have dad living with his parents and his parents are providing food, that notion. Again, those are happening because dad is not financially, with his support obligation, able to continue to provide in a separate independent place. He still has an obligation to support and care for his children. And right now, the only way he's meeting that obligation is through relying on family support. And as we look at the purpose of the child support statute, which is to ensure that essentially the economic needs of the child are met, that looks at being met in both homes. And so I think to suggest that, you know, mom needs so much more in support because of this Wednesday overnight being at her house, and then trying to argue that, well, dad doesn't even provide the housing, it's because of that economic inability to do so. And so I think that's an important piece there as we look at the facts of this case. As coming back around to the abuse of discretion and the, you know, when does that become an abuse of discretion? Again, I think we have to look at the fact of, you know, when I see the word significant, that to me, again, I would suggest means significant, something certainly greater than 50%. And when we're dealing with a situation that says 80% of that parenting time, 80% of the time is with dad on Wednesdays, that is a significant period of time. And I don't see how the court, assuming if we're using the abuse.
just along those lines, there is a Tuesday night overnight. And so I'm wondering, in your view, when a Tuesday night overnight ends and the Wednesday overnight equivalent begins.
From my standpoint, I guess the Tuesday overnight is his parenting time really begins on Tuesday afternoon at 3:30, I believe is what the court order says. And that would continue and as an overnight. And then the Wednesday parenting time, I guess you could define it as whether it starts at midnight or continuing on into the morning time when they wake up. But either way, it is a continuous period of time. And I think one of the concerns that I had...
Well, it's a continuous period of time when the children aren't in school. But I believe the record suggests that they're in school at least some of the time until 3 o'clock or so.
And the same would hold true when mom's home as well. And I think the court, as we look at this direct care notion that's talked about, direct care does not mean that the child has to be with the parent during the entire period of time. There was an unpublished decision, Tapper v. Lobby, which is cited in my brief, which expressly rejected the argument that time spent at work or in daycare at school can't be included. I mean, the children, whether they're with mom or with dad, they're still in school during that time frame. And so that point shouldn't cut against dad having credit for the children being in his care. And I think one of the things my time is almost running out. And I think one of the things that's significant that I want to point out as well regarding the court's decision is the court in its decision references or essentially alludes to the fact that dad's parenting time on Wednesday is essentially just a couple of hours, 4 hours after school. That's not what dad's parenting time is. Dad's parenting time is that entire day up until 7:30. He's in direct responsibility for the children that day in their direct care. And I think the court, when it opined that he only had the children for 4 hours, that was candidly inconsistent with the court's order. And I see
Would you say that was clear error then, that finding? I think the court said from 3 o'clock to 7:30 is really the dad's responsible time. Am I correct that the dad is responsible on Wednesdays for getting the kids off to school as well?
Correct. The children wake up in his home on Wednesday morning and remained under his direct care. Parents who would pay for activities, school lunch, any of those types of things, recreation, all of the things that child support is supposed to be for during the, or that accounts for in a parenting expense. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal time. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. The child support magistrate, for the record, John Berigree representing respondent Olivia Boss.
Thank you.
The child support magistrate that calculated child support by using the party's agreed upon parenting schedule and the number of overnights each party has did not err in his decision. And Judge Brosnahan on review at the district court level did not abuse her discretion in affirming the calculation of child support.
Didn't the district court minimize the responsible parent's parenting time by suggesting that his time really doesn't begin until 3 o'clock?
And I think as far as that goes, Your Honor, I think that to some extent, yes, it was minimized. And I think it accounted for the fact that.
Isn't that a clear error?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
I mean, in light of the case law and just basic practicality, when a parent's responsible for kids, you've got to get up, you've got to get the kids off to school. And just because the kid's in school doesn't mean you're not responsible. Doesn't mean you're not going to get a call from the school and find out the kid is sick or there's some there's a snow emergency. The kids have to leave school early. Parents have to respond to those sorts of things. Why don't we begin the process with a parenting time allocation as suggested in the appellant's brief? As far as how much time is considered. And if we do that, isn't that so significant that it's equivalent to an overnight?
We could begin there, but that's not what the statute requires. The statute says that we either use overnights or overnight equivalents, one or the other.
Are you suggesting that the And that's, I guess that was another question as it's interpreting the statute. So you are arguing the proposition that the way Ms. Doom interprets the district court's decision, that the district court is bound to choose overnights or overnight equivalents and apply that either one of those to the whole parenting time arrangement. And you can't pick and choose some days versus others.
I think if you pick and choose, you're falling into that second category where you're choosing this overnight equivalence as some sort of other, you're using time spent maybe on an hourly basis, but you're not using overnights or overnight equivalents. The statute doesn't provide for that. It says or. And if there was an and or an and between the overnights and overnight equivalents, I think you could do that. But what results when you do it that way, Your Honor, in practice, is that you would have everybody arguing then about, for example, mom has the children till 3 p.m. On Tuesdays, but then dad has them overnight.
Isn't that the sort of argument that the amendment to the statute in 2016 seems to invite? That you can argue that, well, in this case, you know, I have the kids for so much of the day that it's having a, using the overnight where the kid spends the night is sort of an arbitrary and impractical, unreasonable way to draw the line for Wednesdays, but perhaps not for other days.
And I don't think it's arbitrary, Your Honor. I think it helps practitioners. I think it makes sense. And in my brief, I did an hourly calculation. So using the overnight method, and for the 2 weeks, appellant has 5 out of the 14 days, and that amounts to about 36%. I think it's 35.7, but let's call it 36%. If you use an hourly calculation running to midnight on each day, he has the children, although there's a difference between the summer and the school schedule, for about 37%. Using what appellant wants to do with calculating, he gets the overnights, plus then he's arguing that, you know what, I should also get an overnight equivalent, and that would actually bring his time to 50-50. And so he's 50-50, but his hourly assessment is only 37%. And that comes back to the abuse of discretion.
So it seems like this is the trouble I've got. You want to count the time all the way through midnight, even though the children are asleep, but you don't want to count the time that the children are in school, even though the parent might have to respond to school concerns, even though the parent has to get the kids ready for school. Let me just ask this. Do you agree that the district court erred, at least in referring to dad's Wednesdays as beginning at 3 o'clock and ending at 7:30 for the purpose of calculating, or for the purpose of considering whether to apply the overnight versus equivalency approach?
I think there's no question that dad parenting time is clearly from 3:30 Tuesday to 7:30 Wednesday. So to that extent, Your Honor, I would agree that his parenting time doesn't begin at 3 o'clock. But again, coming back to the abuse of discretion, I think the court had the ability and had the discretion to determine whether we're using overnights or overnight equivalents.
Well, explain why it would be within the district court's discretion. If the calculation is correct by Ms. Doom, that dad essentially has parenting time for 19 and a half hours on Wednesdays, and mom just for that period from 7:30 until midnight, or if you're looking at the time the kids are awake, mom has the kids only from 7:30 for 1 hour or so, and dad has the kids from whatever time in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning until 7:30, so 12 hours or so. Why isn't an abuse of discretion not to choose the option the legislature made available to courts to apply the equivalency approach?
Well, a couple of reasons. I think the court has the ability to decide whether or not to even consider the overnight equivalence. And I think that burden then falls on the person presenting the argument and requesting overnight equivalence. But I also think then, you know, if that's how it were to go in practice, mom would then argue the same thing for Tuesdays, that from, you know, 7 a.m. till 3 p.m. when the kids are awake versus 3 p.m. to 8 o'clock when they go to sleep, mom has more significant time. She has longer time. What you're talking about would be essentially if the legislature had made a black and white rule that whoever has 51%, and there would be some discretion there if they weren't providing for or something like that, there might be exceptions. But that's not what the statute that we're talking about says. And the statute doesn't say that we're going to do overnights, plus we're going to do whoever has the kids 51% more. That's just not how child support is calculated.
Well, you agree that abuse of discretion is the standard that we would apply.
Yes, I would agree that the district court had the discretion to
use. Help us. Ms. Doom struggled with this. Maybe you can clarify it for us. Where do we draw the line? At what point does an appellate court say the district court abuses discretion? Give us a circumstance where the district court would be compelled to apply the equivalency approach rather than the overnight approach.
Well, the first in deciding which method to use, overnights or overnights equivalent, it's permissive. It's a may. It says the percentage of parenting time may be determined by either overnights or overnight equivalents. So I think the district court has discretion in choosing which one to use.
Right. Are you suggesting it's absolute discretion so that regardless of the circumstances, the district court can never abuse its discretion because it's permissive?
No. Here's an example for you. If, let's say, somebody works, somebody has the children from 9 to 5 every day, but no overnights, the court's going to need to compensate that person in some way. So they're going to use overnight equivalents, and they're going to probably give that person credit for 5 days that week or something close to that, maybe 3 days that week to balance it out. But they're not going to have any overnights. If you used a straight overnight system to calculate, you're going to end up with zero for that person. But they're expending all these expenses from 9 to 5. In this situation, overnight equivalents would be, well, they've got them during the day from 9 to 5. They got them 40 hours a week. Let's give them 2 nights. Let's say that's 48 hours. Let's give them 2 nights out of every week and use an overnights equivalent to determine that 2 out of every 7 days, extrapolated to 365, they're going to have the 28% or whatever that number comes out to, and they're going to have 28% parenting time. And we'll use that for purposes of plugging it into the child support calculator.
So you suggested that could be an approach. I'm trying to get a sense of when it's a mandatory, when the district court abuses its discretion. You've described a situation where the district court would be operating within its discretion. I'm trying to see where that line is.
Well, I think it would be an abuse of discretion in that situation for the district court to say overnights are the only way we're going to do it. When you have a clear case where you should be using overnight equivalents because it's not fair, I think that would be plainly wrong and unfair.
And what is there some language in the statute that informs that description of this, of what the legislature had in mind?
Well, I think the sentence right after that, it says for purposes of this section, overnight equivalents are calculated by using a method other than overnights if the parent has significant time periods on separate days and the child doesn't stay overnight. So I guess that doesn't necessarily suggest exactly like Your Honor's saying, but that's how I would suggest that language is interpreted. To further support this and or reading and whether or not the you can use overnights or overnight equivalents, I think prior to the 2016 amendment, the law was pretty clear. The language said, or you can use an alternative method. This court in Jones v. Jarvinen said that this is an or, it's an alternative method. My position on, respondent's position on that is that the 2016 amendment did not actually change to include, as appellant is asking, to include these overnight equivalents. It merely just defined what this alternative method is and gave a title to overnight equivalents. And I think there's support for that in some of the other amendments that are listed in that 2016 change. and I cited to a couple of them in my brief, and I had the wrong statute number, so I apologize for that. I cited Minnesota Statute 518.175. I think I wrote 715, so I had the wrong one, but it's 175, subdivision 5. And in that statute, it actually references back to, for purposes of this section, overnight equivalence has the meaning as defined in the parenting expense adjustment statute. So that leads me to believe that the legislature in 2016 was just defining this alternative method as overnight equivalence. Also further suggesting that they mean a overnights or meaning or is there's two other provisions that were amended that use that same overnight or overnight equivalent language. That's that same statute as well as statute 518A.39 subdivision 2D. And this again suggests that they meant or when they wrote or, and or the plain language of it suggests one or the other. The only other thing I wanted to address with the court is the 2019 unpublished or non-precedential case of In re the custody of BLF. I know that that case is an issue because the court actually quotes and writes overnights and overnight equivalents is what the court may consider. I don't think the court wasn't relying on that in its decision. In that case, the court was dealing with parenting time and calculating parenting time and used both overnights and Wednesdays from 3 to 7:30 p.m. to create additional parenting time. But when the court went back to calculating child support, they only went with the overnights and affirmed and found that the court did not abuse its discretion in only using overnights, but then also gave us this quote. So I would ask this court to publish this opinion and rectify that language in BLM if that's within the court's purview. And so in this case,
what would the syllabus point be?
What would the syllabus point be?
Yes.
Just clarifying the language of the statute, I guess, and overruling or, clarifying BLF. I don't know. That's a little bit.
It seems that your approach ties the district court's hands in a circumstance where it looks like the legislature was trying to allow for more discretion in the district court. So before the statute said overnights, and now it adds this equivalency option. I'm not sure it works well. I mean, if you had a case where in only one day of the week, it makes sense to apply the equivalency. Let's say there's a parent has the child for 20 hours or 30 hours for 22 hours during the day. And it makes sense to use the overnight approach for every other day, but this one seems to be so extraordinary that the overnight approach would be unfair. In your view, nope, if you said equivalency, you've got to apply the same equivalency standard to every one of the days of the week throughout the whole parenting time schedule. And you can't say, you know, overnights make sense every day except for Wednesdays. And the court's somehow not allowed any flexibility. That seems to be, at least to me, inconsistent with the legislature's overall desire to give the court more discretion. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I hope I'm not conveying that hard of a stance on it. And luckily that's not really the fact pattern that we're dealing with here, but, no, I think as part of the overnight equivalence, then in my mind, you use overnights if that's one way the court can hear argument and decide. Alternatively, you can use overnight equivalence and you can consider a multitude of factors and a range of options, which may involve an hourly calculation or something more similar to that. And you could include overnights in that, but not specifically. Just relying on the overnights. And also, just one last thing, if I may, I don't believe that the legislature created overnight equivalents in 2016. I think that misconstrues what the statute was prior to 2016. Thank you.
Fair enough. Thank you. Counsel for appellant, any rebuttal?
Just briefly, I think kind of picking up off one of the points, counsel talked about the fact, well, then if we're going to look at it, let's look at Tuesdays. And when we look at the time children spend, if we look at waking hours, Tuesdays versus Wednesdays. And I think that analogy actually kind of comparing those 2 days is helpful and really drawing out the point and the significance of the parenting time on Wednesday. If you even assume just the waking hours, so 7:30 to 3:30, on, you know what, on a Tuesday, that's 8 hours. And then with a dad from 3:30 to 8:30, that's 5 hours. You know, you've got a closer, you know, amount of time that the children are spending there. In contrast, on the Wednesdays, even if you just look at waking hours, you're talking 7:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m., 12 hours in contrast to the 1 hour in mom's care. And when you see the significant impact that that creates on the child support obligation in this case, I think it clearly shows a need for some clarity on these issues. And beyond that, I don't have anything further unless the court has specific questions.
So you agree that you think a published opinion would be helpful?
I think a published opinion would be very helpful.
Well, then you can get us the syllabus point that that seems to be evading you both. what is the rule of law that we, in interpreting the statute, what's the rule of law that we apply here?
I think the rule of law that you apply is to first address the issue with whether or not you can use overnight and overnight equivalent in conjunction. If you can look at a situation like this where there's
let's assume we agreed with that syllabus point, mm-hmm. then we would say the district court abuses its discretion when
it fails to give a parent a credit in the parenting expense adjustment for a parenting day in which it has a significant amount of time spent with the child that does not include an overnight.
Well, the statute says, let me push back there. The statute says the district court may choose one or the other, and you can choose, as I read the statute, it's saying you may choose an equivalency approach if it's significant, but it already says that. So, you want us to say the district court abuses its discretion when it is so significant that what?
That I think when it's so significant that the cost of parenting the child incurred on that day are really borne by that parent, regardless of the overnight. I mean, when you look at the statute, right? If you look at the parenting expense adjustment statute, real briefly. It really talks about that the parenting incurs costs related to the child by providing food, clothing, transportation, recreation. And if the parent who is incurring those related expenses isn't getting credit in the parenting expense adjustment for those costs, and the parent who's putting the child to bed at night is the one getting the credit, I think that's where you have an abuse of discretion. I think you have to look at, you know, the bulk of the care. Who is that being provided by in that day? Who is responsible for the expenses? As Justice Ross pointed out, having to leave work if there's a snowstorm, if there's sickness, having to stay home, having to, you know, provide for field trips or different activities. And I think that's where we have to look at it. And I think this case highlights, you know, pretty strong period of time in which dad is in that care, but receiving no credit of it in his child support and at a significant expense to him in terms of the overall support obligation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both of you. I think in the legislature's attempt to make things more clear, it might've made it more challenging, but we appreciate your briefing on this point and for your oral argument today. Very helpful to us. And the matter is submitted. We'll issue our opinion within the statutory